All right, let's open our Bibles to the book of Jonah. Stuck back in the Old Testament, after Amos and Obadiah, and before Micah and Nahum, find the book of Jonah, one of all of our favorite stories in the Bible. You know, some people have said it's the greatest fish story in the Bible. It's a whale of a story, whatever you want to call it. I heard the story about a little girl that was reading the Bible, and a man saw her reading the Bible, and he said, "What are you reading?" She said, "I'm reading the Bible." He said, "You don't believe those stories in the Bible, do you?" She said, "Yes, I do." He said, "Well, you don't really believe that story about Jonah being swallowed by a fish." And she said, "I really do believe that." And he said, "Well, how could that happen? How could a fish swallow a man?" She said, "Well, I don't know, but when I get to heaven, I will ask Jonah." And the man said, "Well, what if he's not in heaven?" She said, "Then you can ask him." A couple of things before we get into it. 2 Kings chapter 14, verse 25. You just want to write it down. You don't have to turn to it because I'm going to read it for you. Jonah was a real prophet, not just somebody who had a story about being swallowed by a fish. It says in verse 25 of 2 Kings chapter 14, talking about Jeroboam, he restored Israel's border from Lebo Hamath as far as the Sea of the Arabah, according to the word the Lord, the God of Israel, had spoken through his prophet Jonah, son of Amittai, from Gath-Hepher. So we read about Jonah not only in the book named Jonah, but in 2 Kings we are told that he was an actual prophet of the Lord. And of course, the Lord Jesus in Matthew chapter 12, when they kept asking Jesus for a sign, "Give us a sign, give us a sign," he said, "The only sign you'll be given is the sign of Jonah." So he believed that Jonah was a true historical character. And Jesus said, "As Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the fish, so shall the Son of Man be in the heart of the earth 3 days and three nights." So what is the sign of Jonah? It's a sign of a resurrection. So the one sign that you really have to go by that Jesus performed above all the other signs or miracles was the sign of Jonah, the sign of resurrection. Now, you know, there are only four chapters in Jonah. It's been outlined a lot of different ways. One of my favorite outlines to the story of Jonah is chapter one is Jonah running from God. Chapter two is Jonah running to God. Chapter 3 is Jonah running with God, and chapter 4 is Jonah running ahead of God. It's a very interesting story, so let's jump right in. Chapter 1, verse 1. The word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai, same one we read about in 2 Kings. "Get up, go to the great city of Nineveh, and preach against it, because their evil has come up before me." So Jonah got up and to flee to Tarshish from the Lord's presence. Now, because of 2 Kings, we know where Jonah lived. He lived near, actually, a little bit north of Nazareth, which is up in Galilee. And Nineveh would have been to the northeast. And he starts running toward Tarshish, which is to the southwest. In other words, God said, "I want you to go in this direction." And Jonah said, "Well, Lord, I am going in this direction, the opposite." So keep reading there. To flee from Tarshish from the Lord's presence. He went down to Joppa. Now, we know Joppa is right there on the Mediterranean Sea. That's a city that exists today that you can visit. He found a ship going to Tarshish. He paid the fare, and he went down into it with them to Tarshish from the Lord's presence. The second time, he's running from God. But the Lord threw a great wind onto the sea, and such a great storm arose on the sea that the ship threatened to break apart. The sailors were afraid, and each cried out to his God. They threw the ship's cargo into the sea to lighten the load. Meanwhile, Jonah had gone down to the lowest part of the vessel and stretched out and fallen into a deep sleep. The captain approached him and said, "Hey, what are you doing sound asleep? Get up, call your God. Maybe this God will consider us." and we won't perish. Come on, the soldiers said to each other, let's cast lots, and then we'll know who is to blame for this trouble we're in. So they cast lots, and the lot signaled out Jonah. Then they said to him, tell us who is to blame for this trouble we're in. Hey, what is your business, and where are you from? What is your country, and what people are you from? He answered them, I'm a Hebrew. I worship the Lord, the God of the heavens, who made the sea and the dry land. Then the men were seized by great fear, and they said to him, what is this you've done? The men knew he was fleeing from the Lord's presence because he had told them. So they said to him, what should we do to you so that the sea will calm down for us? For the sea was getting worse and worse. He answered them, pick me up and throw me into the sea so that it will calm down for you. For I know that I'm to blame for this great storm that is against you. Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to get back to dry land, but they couldn't because the sea was raging against them. So they called out to the Lord, to Jonah's Lord, please, Lord, don't let us perish because of this man's life, and don't charge us with innocent blood. For you, Lord, have done just as you pleased. And then they picked up Jonah, threw him into the sea, and the sea stopped its raging, and the men were seized by a great fear of the Lord, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. And so, wow, you go from running from God, getting on board a ship, terrible storm. They pick him up and they throw him in the water. And Jonah thought, this is it. This is the end. I'm dead. Anybody thrown overboard in the middle of a terrible storm, far from land, definitely going to drown. Except we read there in verse 17, the Lord appointed, and that's a very interesting word in Hebrew, and we're going to see it again in chapter 4. It's a word that literally means designed or prepared a great fish to swallow Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and 3 nights. All right, we're going to learn some lessons from the life of Jonah, and here's lesson number one. You can run from God, but you cannot hide from God. He took off heading as far away as he could from God, but he never could flee the Lord's presence. And the Lord prepared this fish to sort of stop his fleeing. Now, the whole debate that people want to make these days, well, was it a whale? Was it a fish? And, there are stories in history of whalers who were being swallowed by a whale, and then they caught the whale, and 2 days later cut him open, and there's the guy. There's even stories about a great shark or something that swallowed somebody, and then they cut the shark open, and there was the guy alive. And some people need stories like that, but I don't, I wouldn't believe this story even anymore if we found the skeleton of a whale on some beach somewhere with Jonah's initials carved into the ribs. Jonah, I was here. No, I believe in a God of great miracles. And when God designs something and prepares something, he makes it just right. I tend to think that this was just not any ordinary run-of-the-mill fish. I think this was a special kind of hotel type fish that God designed. I think it had wall-to-wall carp, and Jonah slept on a foam blubber mattress. I just think that God made this fish just on purpose, don't you think? It just was a special fish for a special day, for a special person, and his name was Jonah. Now, I want to ask you tonight, where or what is your Nineveh? What is it that God is calling you to do, directing you to do, that you really don't want to do it, and you just kind of keep turning from God? You're running from God. But I just want to say again that you cannot hide from God. You can run from God, but you just can't hide from God. Why is that? Because God says, anywhere you go, I'm already there. He was there. And I might ask you, you know, where is your Tarshish? In other words, what is it that you're running toward right now, thinking that you can get away from God's plan for your life? You're going to be face danger and trouble and opposition as long as you're running from God. There's sort of a little sub-lesson that we learn from this. I didn't list it as a major lesson, but, you know, we also learn this, that sometimes our sin costs other people. And we see that in the sense that it was Jonah's fault that a big storm was there, but all these other sailors, they were being affected by Jonah's disobedience and sin. And the same is true with us personally, that when we sin in our lives, there are consequences that not only touch us, but touch people around us, our family, our friends sometimes. It's like the pebble dropped into the water and the ripples go out and touch other people. So that's the first lesson. You can run from God, but you can't hide. So here we are. Jonah's in the belly of the fish. Let's pick up with chapter 2, verse 1. Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish. And actually, we get to read Jonah's prayer here, which to me sounds really a lot like one of the Psalms, because so many of the Psalms are someone crying out to the Lord in a time of distress. I called to the Lord in my distress, and he answered me. I cried out for help from deep inside Sheol. You heard my voice. You, God, threw me into the depths, into the heart of the sea, and the current overcame me. All your breakers and your billows swept over me. But I said, I've been banished from your sight, yet I will look once more toward the holy temple. The water engulfed me up to my neck. The watery depths overcame me. Seaweed was trapped around my head. I sank to the foundations of the mountains. The earth's gates shut behind me forever. But then you raised my life from the pit, Lord my God. In other words, I was in the water thinking I was going to die, but then all of a sudden I'm alive. And it says, as my life was fading away, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to you, to your holy temple. Those who cherish worthless idols abandon the faithful love. But for me, I will sacrifice to you with a voice of thanksgiving. I will fulfill what I have vowed. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Now, you know, this was not a get out of well free prayer. You know, just please God, get me out of this well. It was just his resignation to the fact that I should be dead right now, but you have delivered me from death. And so, Lord, now I do want to turn to you, and I want to renew my commitment to you. I renew my vow. And so here's lesson two that we learn in this story, and it is that God may use adversity to get our attention. God may use adversity to get our attention. Sometimes I'm talking about me, we are so hard-headed sometimes when God's trying to get us to do something or to lead us to do something that he has to use adversity and pain to get our attention. Now, God is not the author of evil. He doesn't tempt anyone, but he can use these circumstances like a storm to get our attention. I heard about a farmer one time that was working with a mule, and he would talk to the mule and the mule wouldn't do anything. And so the farmer kept a 2x4 and he just walked up and whapped that mule on the forehead. And somebody said, well, you don't have to punish that mule. And he said, oh, I don't do that to punish the mule. I just do it to get his attention. And I think that sometimes we're so hard-headed that God has to do something to get our attention. In fact, one of my favorite verses, if you want to write it down, is Psalm 32:9. Psalm 32:9 says, do not be like the mule or the horse that has to be led about by a bridle. And why would the Bible tell us that we shouldn't be like a mule unless sometimes we had mulish stubbornness? This is a true story from the stories of Sam Jones, the old Methodist evangelist. He was talking about a guy who had a mule hooked up to a buggy, and he was trying to get the mule to go. He pulled, he pushed, he did everything he could, and he couldn't get that mule to move. And so what he did, he just put some sticks and branches and everything right under the belly of the mule and just set it on fire to get the mule to burn, to move. And so you know what? The mule did move. He moved forward about 5 feet and stood there while the carriage burned to a crisp. So, I think sometimes we're like that, that it takes adversity and trouble and difficulty in our lives to get our attention. Well, here we have a prophet running away from God all of a sudden in a storm, in a fish. God says, I think I've got your attention now, don't I, Jonah? And, you know, I've talked about it before many times. But sometimes we have to get potted, get to the point of total desperation before we turn to the Lord. And I know that's true in my life and a lot of people's lives. And so let's keep on with the story here. Verse 10. Then the Lord, this is verse 10 of chapter 2. Then the Lord commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto dry land. So I can remember hearing that for the first time in Sunday school and all of us giggling that even the word vomit would be in the Bible. And that's a pretty graphic image there, you know. I saw a cartoon that had Jonah wearing a t-shirt that said, if swallowed, induce vomiting. That's a warning for poison. But sure enough, this whale or fish or whatever it was comes near the shore and just regurgitates Jonah out. And I believe that Jonah hit the ground running. I don't think he sat there and said, I'm glad that's over with. I think he hit the ground running toward Nineveh. And then it says in verse 1 of chapter 3, then the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time. Thank God for the second time. Get up. Go to the great city of Nineveh and preach the message that I tell you. That's exactly what God said in chapter 1. Jonah got up and went to Nineveh according to the Lord's commands. Now, Nineveh was an extremely great city, a three-day walk, meaning it took you 3 days to get across the city walking. Jonah set out on the first day of this walk in the city, and he proclaimed, all right, here's his message. We concentrate a lot on the message of the prophets, the preaching of the prophets. So let's pay very close attention to the message that Jonah preached. He said, in 40 days, Nineveh will be demolished. That's it. Seven words. That's all he said. It wasn't like, repent and turn to God who is compassionate and kind and loving and forgive you. He says that later about God, but his message to these people in Nineveh was, in 40 days, Nineveh will be demolished. And now, what we're going to learn about Jonah is that he's an obedient prophet, but he is a very reluctant prophet. Because we're going to see that, you know really what Jonah wants to happen? He wants God to destroy the city because he doesn't like these people, these Ninevites, this terrible Gentile wicked people. So he just is there to just announce the sentence. In 40 days, your city will be destroyed. But keep reading there in verse 5. Then the people of Nineveh believed God. They didn't believe Jonah. They believed God. They proclaimed a fast. They dressed in sackcloth from the greatest of them to the least. And when the word reached the king of Nineveh, he got up from his throne and took off his royal robe, put on sackcloth and sat in ashes. And then he issued a decree in Nineveh. Now, we don't know this king's name. It's lost to history. But really, folks, this would be one of the greatest kings, one of the greatest leaders of ancient history because of what he says next. Here's his proclamation. By order of the king and his nobles, no person or animal, herd or flock is to taste anything at all. They must not eat or drink water. Furthermore, both people and animals must be covered with sackcloth and everyone must call out earnestly to God. Each must turn from his evil ways, from his wrong knowing, doing. Who knows? God may turn and relent. He may turn from his burning anger so that we will not perish. God saw their actions and that they had turned from their evil ways. So God relented from the disaster he had threatened them with, and he did not do it. Well, let's learn lesson number three right now. Lesson three is that we see is that God is willing to give us a second chance and third chance and fourth chance. Look up there at chapter 3, verse 1 again. It says, the word of the Lord came to Jonah this second time. Now, that's the good thing about God. With God, he doesn't say, okay, you disobeyed me, you ran from me, that's it. You're off my list. No, over and over again, we see God taking somebody who's failed, who's been disobedient, and he said, you know what? I'm going to give you a second chance. I'm going to give you a third chance. You know, it's like this. God has a will for your life, and he wants you to follow it. But sometimes we get off track. I remember in the church that I served in Alabama for so many years, we had a retired engineer from Redstone Arsenal up in Huntsville. That's where they built the huge rockets that lifted off and took all the Apollo, Gemini space missions into space. And I remember he was telling us one time about how when those huge rockets take off, there's always a programmed trajectory to get them to a certain window into outer space. He said, but they seldom ever follow that trajectory. He said, because of weather conditions, propulsion or something like that, they get a little off course. But he says, then we correct it, and we get it back on course. And then it gets back, and then we correct it again. And he says, most of those have been corrected maybe a dozen or two dozen times, but always the trajectory gets it to the window into outer space. And he was using that as an example of how God works with each one of us. How God has a plan for us. And you know, it'd be great if we would just go room right straight to it all the time. But most of our lives are like this. We'll get a little off track, and God will correct us and says, I'll give you a second chance. And we get a little off track. I'm going to give you another chance. But the desired result is he accomplishes with us his purpose and plan for our lives. Of course, this NASA engineer said this. He said that didn't always happen, though sometimes a rocket would get so far off course they couldn't be fixed. And so, you know what we did? We blew it up, exploded it. And we don't want to be that way. And it's not like God gives us unlimited chances. It's not like we can say, well, I know I can fail. He'll give me another chance. 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 You may end up being like one of those rockets that kind of gets boom, boom, you know. So that's true of Jonah, and it's true of us that God is the God of a second chance. And we've already come to the next lesson, lesson four, and that is God will withhold judgment when people repent. So, you know, some people say, well, God was going to destroy the city, and then he didn't. So does that mean God changed? Because, you know, I thought the Bible said God doesn't change. Oh, no. Oh, God's standard was still the same. It's the people who changed. They changed their attitude toward God. They changed their attitude toward sin. And it was because of their change of attitude that the judgment, the punishment, was withheld. I heard it explained this way one time. It's like a weather vane. You know, a weather vane is always solid, but it is the wind that changes and turns it. And that's like God is always true to his word. He never lies. He never changes. But it is our conditions and response to him that determines how he relates to us. And I want to say again, this leader, unknown, unnamed, is a great leader. And when I read that, I couldn't help but remember what Abraham Lincoln did for the United States in the middle of the Civil War on March the 30, 1863. He said, "I do proclaim and designate and set apart Thursday, April 30, 1863 as a day of national fasting, humiliation, and prayer. I do hereby request all the people to abstain on that day from their ordinary secular pursuits and to unite at their several places of public worship in keeping that day holy to the Lord. All this being done in sincerity and truth, let us then rest humbly in the hope authorized by the divine teachings that the united cry of the nation will be heard on high and answered with blessings no less than the pardon of our national sins and the restoration of our now divided and suffering country to its former happy condition of unity and peace." To me, that sounds exactly like what this king of Nineveh did. He said, "We're going to declare a fast and we're going to repent." And wouldn't it be wonderful if we had a president today who would call our nation to a day of fasting and prayer for national unity? But can you imagine how that would go over in the media? How that would be lampooned? How that would be laughed at, ridiculed today? Just shows you how far our nation has come from where we used to be spiritually. Well, we come to chapter 4. All right, here's the picture. He preached a seven-word sermon. Everybody repented. You know about a citywide crusade revival where everybody got saved? I can just imagine that Jonah was just thrilled about this. Look at chapter 4, verse 1. Jonah was greatly displeased and became furious. He prayed to the Lord, "Lord, please, isn't this what I thought while I was still in my own country? That's why I fled from Tarshish in the first place. Fled toward Tarshish in the first place. I knew that you are," and I like what he says about God here, "you're a gracious, compassionate God, slow to anger, abounding in faithful love, and the one who relents from sending disaster. And now, Lord, hey, just take my life from me again, for it is better for me to die than to live." Well, what's up with that? This prophet, I told you, he was running away from God, running to God, running with God. Now he's running ahead of God. He didn't want God to spare these people. He didn't like these people. So here again, the same word that it used where it says that he appointed a fish. God's going to kind of manufacture some things here for Jonah to teach him a lesson from nature. The Lord asked, "Is it right for you to be angry?" Angry about what? "Or is it right for you to be angry about my forgiving nature?" Answer to the question is no. But let me show you how wrong it is to be angry. So Jonah left the city and found a place east of it. He made himself a shelter there and sat in its shade to see what would happen to the city. Now see, he's still holding out hope that God will destroy the city. Then the Lord, same word, appointed, manufactured, designed a plant. And it grew over Jonah to provide shade for his head to rescue him from his trouble. Jonah was greatly pleased with the plant. But when dawn came the next day, God appointed, manufactured, designed a worm to attack the plant, and it withered. As the sun was rising, God, same word, created, designed, manufactured a scorching east wind. And the sun beat down on Jonah's head so much that he almost fainted. And he wanted to die again. He said, "It's better for me to die than to live." Notice the same question, but he put it in a different way. God says, "Is it right for you to be angry about the plant? You know, I did all that. I gave you the shade. I gave you the plant. I took it away. Should you be angry about that? It's the same thing. I created these people, and I withheld the judgment. Is it right to be angry about that?" You know, I like Jonah. He's not happy here. "Yes, it's right," replied. "I'm angry enough to die." So the Lord said, "You cared about the plant, which you did not labor over. You did not grow it. It appeared in a night and perished in a night. But may I not care about the great city of Nineveh, which has more than 120,000 people who cannot distinguish between their right and the left? as well as many animals. And so that's the end of the book. It ends with that question. It ends with that question. The question is this: you're so upset with your little plant that I made for you, that I killed. Don't I have a right to care about a city full of people that I created? And the comparison and the contrast there is just too much for anybody to ignore. Jonah was wrong to be mad about that. So I guess the final lesson five is that this, that God can use people with flaws. God can use people with flaws, because even though Jonah was obedient, even though he went there and he preached, he had a terrible attitude and he had a bad motive. Now, you say, I'm not really understanding this. Well, it's amazing what God can do with anyone who's obedient, even if they're not perfect, because none of us are perfect. I had a seminary professor who used to say it like this: God can strike a mighty lick with a crooked stick. And Jonah was a crooked old stick, but God struck a mighty lick with that. And so you see, you don't have to be perfect. And it reminds me of what Paul wrote about in Philippians 1, where he says, what about those people that are preaching Christ for the wrong motive? He said, I don't care. As long as Christ is being preached, praise God. Maybe they've got the wrong motive. I guarantee you, Jonah had the wrong motive, didn't he? He wanted God to destroy him. So, sometimes we get so upset by things. You remember Jim and Tammy Faye Baker and the 700 Club and how it turned out to just be a bunch of greed and all that and everything. Guess what? God even used that to reach some people for Christ. And I think there are going to be some people in heaven who got saved because they watched the 700 Club, even though their motives weren't right. God can strike a mighty lick with a crooked stick. So what are you upset about tonight? What is your petty plant? What is your shade plant that you're upset about because all of a sudden it's been taken away? God's got other bigger things in mind in this world. And so let's make sure that we don't get tied up in the little trivial things of our lives that get us upset. God's doing great things around the world, and let's join him in that.